WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I got my pen out for this one, also wearing my Coons Ford shirt. We're going to get the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. I will put my pen down and pick up maybe a beer and a crab cake. We're going to start the tour at Mama's on the Half Shell in Canton this week. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. I got the whole schedule together for the whole month of March. I got my act together for spring, finally. We're going to be at El Guapo on the 10th, having some delicious Mexican food, probably a two margaritas for me and some chips and salsa as well. That's on the 10th. Don Mollard's going to join me for that one. On the 18th, we move to Costas in Dundalk, the original home of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And, of course, at Fadley's on the 23rd, we're going to do that in the morning down at Lexington Market. Don will be with me for that one. Don would have liked this one because Don loves, like, writers and smart people. And Don was Mr. Professor Guy when I met him and all that. She is the Humanities Symposium Director and Professor of Writing. And I always tell my wife, when I die, it's not going to say entertainer, sports radio guy, radio entrepreneur. I just want my tombstone to say writer, because that's really all I ever really wanted to be. So I love talking about writing and writings with writers. Marion Crotty joins me here from right down the road, down at Loyola, where I only had one lecture at Loyola once. They never let me back. And I'll tell you what, Marion, the thing I thought about Loyola, having never walked on the campus other than in Reitz Arena, Loyola's really nice. Like, when I walked around, I'm like, man, my college wasn't this nice. UB wasn't this nice, you know? So congratulations. It's a pleasure to have you on. I know you're doing some important things here this month, and we'll talk about your fiction work and reading and how people don't read enough, people don't write enough. But you're shaping the young minds, and you're doing a pretty cool event here later on in the month. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me on. I'm interested to hear about your writing, and you are welcome at Loyola anytime.
Oh, geez. Here we go. So let's have the original sin here, fiction versus nonfiction. I went through this with a very astute sports friend of mine. Okay. I had a 2.5 hour liquid breakfast with a friend of mine the other day, and we were talking about writing and reading. And I recently destroyed a bunch of my own books. Not in any sort of Russian way or any sort of what's going on in the South kind of way. I just had a bunch of books. They didn't sell. I wrote it on the Ravens, and I just had to decide, what am I going to do with it? Libraries didn't want it. I offered to Torrey Smith's kids or whatever. And here I am, like, I wrote a book 7 years ago on the Ravens, and it's total, like, not nonfiction. You know, it was about a championship. Right. And people walked by me and said, I don't read new books. I ain't read no books in a long time. I ain't read a book. And I'm thinking, oh my God, who are they going to vote for president next time? And then 8 years later, here's we are. It breaks my heart that people don't read the way they once did, but you're going to be mad at me because I don't read fiction so much, right? Like, so I barely have time to keep up on what's going on in the real world, but you're out creating. My daughter-in-law, she's a writer, and she writes and reads. Thank God you folks are still here. So we know something in the world, right?
Well, I mean, I like both. I like nonfiction. I love reading, like, long form nonfiction. I actually have been reading a lot of sports writing lately because I subscribe to, like, the Sunday Long Read, which is by, you know, two. They have some interesting stuff. But in any case, I think what I like about fiction is that you get to be inside someone else's mind. And I don't think there's any other art form that lets you do that, where you're, like, in someone else's head in real time. You're just sort of imagining what it's like to be them. And so to me, it's not like I have to try to remind myself to read fiction. I just want to do it.
You know, what's crazy for me is I've written millions of words, millions. Like, I write a lot. And when I write, I write long. I'm curiously long. I'm long-winded. I'm all of that. And my first training was to be a reporter. I mean, I was 15 years old. I worked at a newspaper. Who, what, where, why, when? Reporter's notebook. Don't lie to me. Are you sure you're lying to me? I'm going to fact check your ass. Like, all facts, like, all of that, right? Truth. And that was, I was 15 years old, and I learned, you know, which takes the comma and, you know, the Oxford, like, all of that, right? And that was the basis of everything I do. And every communication I made, every email, communicating with you, communicating with Karen to have you on the show, all comes in complete sentences. boy, the shorthand of texting and the new generation and how periods and apostrophes and diction, subject, verb, like all of these things that don't exist the way maybe Mr. Pizzorra taught me in seventh grade English, right, back in the day, that how important writing is, like just at a baseline, how much we have to do it every day and how afraid of it most people are, like public speaking, just afraid of it.
Well, I think people are afraid of getting something wrong. And I think people have this idea that if you don't know where the commas go, you're not a real writer. And to me, I'm like, if you're a curious person and you have something to say and you want to genuinely communicate with someone else, I don't think you have to be the person that knows exactly where all the commas are. I think you just have to have something you want to say and be able to find the words to say it. And then I think you're a writer.
I find myself editing people on Facebook and I'm like, yeah. Please don't be lazy with the periods. Your kids are reading this stuff. You know, especially if you're going to say something that has some teeth to it, spell it right. Let's start with that, because there's a credibility issue that's built into that for me. But I want to talk more about fiction and nonfiction.
Sure.
Because I have always written facts. I have always, you know, I've write sports columns here for 25 years on my website. I've written books about the Orioles and the Ravens and about stuff. I've been on the radio 31 years and somebody even recently came to me and said, "Hey, I need you to do play by play." And I'm like, just because I'm on the radio doesn't mean I'm any good. Like I called a horse race once. It was terrible. Like I'm not good at that stuff. I don't think I've ever, because probably in eighth grade I did. I don't think I've ever written a fiction thing in my life. Like I don't even know where, I don't know where it'd be like a pianist playing the guitars. I don't know where I would start if I were in your, cause I saw the courses you're teaching, right? Like I bio you, Marion Crotty, you know? And I'm like, all right. So if I had to go back to college again and be in that really nice college, down at Loyola, and somebody fronted it for me and I wound up with Professor Crotty and in some creative writing class, and I'm a writer and I don't need any issue with words or looking words up or what word do you, right. I'm good with all that. But if you said to me, write something out of your brain and make it up as you go, I don't know where I'd be like writing a song. Like, I don't know where I'd even begin to write a song, right?
Well, okay. So something I do sometimes with my students in the first fiction class is I say, okay, tell me two stories. And we're going to try to figure out which one is true. I want them both to sound true. Tell me something that happened to you over the summer. And one of them's going to be true. One of them's not going to be true. And if you think about where that sort of, it sounds true, but
that's
I sort
like
of made it
Bueller's
up story.
Day off. It means I could do anything I want on my day, right?
Exactly.
Like literally.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then they're like, you're opening my mind. Dr. Crotty is what you're doing here, you know?
I mean, I think we do this anyway, where we sort of, we shape the story, right? Like we know what's interesting. You sort of intuitively, like you tell somebody something that happened to you. It's like, okay, well, you know, I went into the store and four things happened before I got to the interesting conversation with the stranger. So I'm going to take that part out. You're making fiction. You're sort of shaping the story to make it more interesting.
I really wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, it sounds fun because I'm a writer and it sounds like if you challenged me, I could write a true account of what I did last week in New York, right, seeing John Mayer. And then I could write a Holden Caulfield. There you go with some fiction, right? So I could totally go catcher in the rye as to what I might have done in New York last week, but I have never thought of writing such a thing, not for a grade or not for an audience at all. And yet you're this award-winning fiction writer of short stories. Talk a little bit about that, because the intimidation for me to write for an audience that I know exists, right? Like when I write something, I know people are going to read it.
Right.
And that's different than when I started radio 31 years ago, when I spoke out into the microphone and just hoped that God, somebody was there to call 481-1570 and talk to me. Right.
Sure.
Now I know there's an audience. Like, cause I have 10,000 people to follow me on LinkedIn. I have under that. Like I hear, when I'm on the radio, I say things. There's a real audience for whatever I would. If I wanted to do a comedy act, somebody would come and give me $5, probably have a beer and laugh at me. But when it comes to writing for fiction, to write for pleasure or to write to, in the old world, to be published, right? I mean, you've done it both ways, and to be published, sold, awarded and all that, that's just a different level of how many things you've written that nobody's read, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't think you start writing short stories because you're like, yeah, this is the route to fame. I mean, occasionally somebody, you know, there's a book of short stories, like, what was that, After Parties, that short story this year, that short story collection this year. I feel like everybody was reading that. And you know, like sometimes people reach, or, Olive Kittredge, everybody liked that book of short stories, but I don't think, I mean, I think to me, it's just, I think people tend to get into fiction either because they really like language and they just like describing things, because they like the plot and they like making up stories, or because they're interested in characters. And for me, it's the characters. It's just, I sort of get this image in my head of a person doing something, or what would it be like if you were in this particular situation? What would that feel like? And then it's just sort of fun, you know? I mean, I get to play with my imaginary friends all day. So
do you go to movies, or do you use the book person?
Yeah, I love movies.
I don't go to movies anymore. I gave movies up like 20 years ago, and so I'm weird. I mean, I've even given up sports to some degree. Some people in my life would tell you that, but I just I gave up on movies because they were bad. Like I just saw bad things being made, and I'm like, that's not worth 2 hours of my time. And I think a book, The Intimidation of Moby Dick, right? Or whatever that would be. I was joking last week. I had Bill Zorzi on. I said, at some point I'm going to read Hemingway. And, you know, he's pissed at me that I've watched minor league hockey games and haven't read Hemingway, right? Like, what are you doing with your time if you're going to read? So if I were to ask you, if you were to teach a class of anything you wanted to teach and say, there's five books in your life you have to read, what would you tell me I'd have to read?
Well, I don't know if this is really answering your question.
Okay.
But
that makes it more fun. Gives me follow-ups.
I think when I'm teaching a class, I feel like people should read what they actually want to read. Like, I think that when I'm teaching my classes, I almost always try to start with what's accessible and what's recent, because I think that's sort of why people don't read, is because it's like, okay, well, let's make sure the students get the very most important books. And it's like, dude, like, they're not going to get through the very most important books. You have to just like seduce them in terms of, well, that seduce your reader in terms of what is it that people genuinely like.
Just as an American person who's 50 years old, who went to a regular American high school in Dundalk in the 80s, the Steinbeck, the East of Eden, the Grapes of Wrath, the Catcher in the Rye, like, and I don't know whatever the modern version of that.
Okay.
That sort of American education of these are the books you have to read, or reading Hemingway.
You know, that
you feel compelled that you have to start there to some degree. There's a million authors like you writing a million different great stories, and Oprah's got a book club out there and all of that. I think it's intimidating when you see a thick book. I'll tell you this, for my book, if I had it in here, I burned most of them. If I had it in here, the one thing that every non-reader, every Ravens fan in East Baltimore who has a purple flamingo on their lawn, who spent $10,000 to go to the Super Bowl, they love Joe Flacco, but to read his story growing up with his family and his six brothers and sisters in Philadelphia, and to hear the kind of person he was and have his coach talking, like, it was too thick. And they literally would look at it and say, there ain't no pitchers in there. Ain't got enough pitchers in there. And I'm thinking to myself, there's words, and then there's the thickness turn people off. And then I'm thinking the time, because time's the most valuable thing we all have, right? So for me, a 2 hour waste of a lousy Adam Sandler movie is not worth my time. And I see this big thick book and I'm thinking, that's a 20-hour read. That's a three-week thing. Sure. That's a every night. That's a week at the beach. That's a lawn chair weekend in Ocean City, whatever that is. There is a point where you say, is that worth the time? And that's right. always the issue for me is to say, that's why I ask you the five I have to read, because if I'm going to put my time into Moby Dick, I want to know that I'm not just that I'm going to make it past page 20, because you can always put it down, right? But there's the point where what's worth my time?
Right. Okay. I mean, I can give you some books that I'm really excited about lately, but I would also say that, you know, there's, you know, Lauren Groff is great. She, I love her short stories. I love her novels. I really like the writer Juliet Suka. I think she's writing really differently than anyone else. She has a new book out that I'm really excited to read. I like Rebecca Mackay. Did you read that book, Leave the World Behind? I feel like everybody was reading that during the pandemic.
I had people reading it on my timeline, but I did not read it.
It's, I mean, it's really fast. It's just fun. And it was such a perfect book for the pandemic because people are in a vacation home. And so we're like, oh, we can't do that. It was like 2020, this book comes out and you're just like, oh, you get to go to this fancy vacation home. And then all of a sudden really weird stuff starts to happen. But like, you can read that book in an afternoon. I mean, I feel like whatever I'm currently reading at the moment is what I'm excited about.
Do you ever put a book down 20 pages in to say, nah, no good?
It's hard for me, but I do. I mean, I think the time is a real thing, but I mean, I think I think some books right now are really short for that reason. But I think people tend to like long books in the same way that I think people can't feel close to you unless they spend a lot of time with you. So I think, you know, like if you meet one of your neighbors and you're like, oh, we really like each other, you're not really going to become friends unless you've actually put in a certain amount of hours together. And then you slowly over time, it's like, okay, I've seen you, what, like 20, 30 hours, and then we're friends. I think that's why novels stick with you in a way that maybe a movie, like I think this is also why people like serialized television as opposed to movies, because they get to know people. It's like, you know, over like 60 episodes, but it's a different thing with fiction because you're in someone's head and you're seeing the world the way that they see it. And so I think when you read Moby Dick or you read, you know, The Underground Railroad or something, you know, there's a lot of books that have come out, or like the Marlon James novel that's super long. I think people like those in part because they're so long.
Yeah, Michener's that way. You pick it up and it thumps onto the table. Mary Crotty is here. I tell you what, I don't get to talk to writers as much. I talk to sports writers and toy department writers. She's got a symposium coming up here later on in the month. She's over at Loyola. I want to talk about her book as well, What Counts as Love. Long listed for the Bingham Prize and the Kafka Award as well in fiction, appeared in literary journals. You can read on and on and on, but you got a big event happening here, a humanities symposium keynote lecture. Tell me about what's going on St. Patrick's Day, no less, down there in Loyola.
Yeah. So every year, this has been going on since 1986, Loyola, our humanities department, choose a text that we're going to try to get everybody to read. And in addition to reading it, we'll study it with our classes. And this year's book is by Ursula Le Guin, The Left Hand of Darkness. And so to help us sort of understand that book, we have a keynote lecture by the science fiction writer, Jeff Vandermeer. And so he is going to be giving a lecture called Landscape Change and the Long Road Ahead. I'm not sure how much you know about Jeff Vandermeer. He wrote, he's most famous for his Southern Reach trilogy, which is where the first book in it, probably his most famous book, Annihilation, is the first book in that series. It became a movie. And he writes science fiction. It sort of blurs the genres a little bit. And his writing is very influenced by the environment. And this book that we're studying, it takes place on this really extreme planet where it's freezing all the time. And so landscape's a huge part of that book as well. And so he's both going to help us understand that book, but he's also talking about how he became someone who's really interested in the environment and how that made its way into his own fiction.
So he's got a cold planet. We're heating this one up. We're going the other direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in Ursula Le Guin's book, it's freezing. It's the planet's name is Winter.
Well, this event's on March 17th. I encourage everybody to go out and learn about it. I'm going to put some links out on the web as well. And you know, I went to your bio and it got me back to college because I saw the green, I saw the Greyhounds. And, you know, sometimes I'm up the hill at a lacrosse game or concert or whatever, but down onto the campus, I lectured there once and it got me every time I go back to school, it's Rodney Dangerfield in the movie, right? I'm like, all right, if I had to come back here and do this all over again for personal enrichment this time around, you know, not as a real career because I wouldn't have become a journalist at that point. I'm looking at your classes here and I'm thinking to myself, all of these classes are like, because I was such a don't sign up for the science class guy. I was such creative writing. I'm a writer. Give me that class. You know what I mean? Any class I could write in, I could ace because I could write. Anything that made me think too much, I didn't want to do that at UB. You know, I didn't want the biology classes or any of that stuff. I love all your course studies, though. Intro to creative nonfiction, intro to poetry and fiction. I've written a lot. I've never written a poem in my life. What would you?
Poetry intimidates people.
Where would I start? Like, I see the young lady that Joe Biden had as Amanda Gorman.
Oh, yeah. Amazing, right?
I mean, like, that's a gift. That's like Mozart play. It's like seeing the four-year-old kid that plays the piano. Like, I don't think I could do that ever. I don't think I can read what she writes for her.
I mean, I have to say, though, like, I mean, I think write what you want to write. If you want to write a poem, I'm sure you can. If you don't, I mean, we just had Ross Gay come to Loyola, who is amazing, if you haven't read any of Ross Gay. But he started out as a poet, and he was like, I got to get into nonfiction. Nobody reads poetry. So he's coming over to your side, and he wrote The Book of Delights, which became a New York Times bestseller. But he had to go away from poetry to get there. I think write what you want to write. But if you want to start.
Well, thank you. Because so I don't feel like I have to do it now. I mean, I feel like I need to be more well-rounded to do one fiction something. But I barely have time to write nonfiction at this point, you know?
And half the fiction writers I meet are like reading, you know, the glossy magazines. They're like, if only I could be a reporter, you know, so.
Well, you know what? And I talked to my daughter-in-law because my daughter-in-law is working on the next great novel. She spends a lot of time working on her novel. And at some point I'll read it and it'll be ready. And I've written 4 books. So I know what it's like to be completely antisocial, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy to go, you know, like I'm a very, you know, I like people. And when you write a book, there's nothing about that that's not lock yourself in a room. I mean, it's completely under yourself. I don't shave, bathing, all those weird habits. Yeah. But the notion that a reporter can go out to a scene, write a story, and have it done at 11 o'clock tonight, there's something about that that's a completely different task and move on to the next thing than somebody that's like, I have John Eisenberg, one of my mentors, on all the time. He's forever. He'll start on a book in 2019 and then the baby's made. It's like elephants. It's made like 2 years later, right? When I've done my books, it's been 100-day like method acting sprint to the finish line because I've had a timeline on it. I don't even know what it would be like to be making one of these whales. You know, something that takes 3 to 5 years to make a novel, to make a book. It's just such a different craft than give me a 12-inch story for the newspaper tomorrow. It's a different thing.
Oh, completely. And I mean, when you were saying, oh, your friend, you know, bangs it out in 2 years, I was like, that's amazingly fast. But yeah, I think it's really different. And I think the like ratio of research to writing, you know, where I imagine like when you write a story, like what percentage of it would you say, you know, the time that you're working on it is research, maybe like 80%?
I found that in the books that I did on the football team, the second book was a lot easier because I had the web. The first book was 2001. And if I literally needed to go back and see who made a tackle in a play, I had to go get videotape. Like it was a whole different level. The web has been the great bibliography. I remember the bibliographies would tear me up back in high school, the little ones and the footnotes and the like all that stuff that I had on term papers. The modern era of the web, you know, come on, man. I go back to Dewey Decimal and Card Catalog and like all the fact that you can get facts and get documentation to some degree, if it's trustworthy, that you can find things quickly. As a fact reporter, but as a fiction writer, what would I don't need anything. I just need an imagination and a keyboard, right? Literally.
I mean, I do actually do a lot of research for fiction. It's probably just not as much for nonfiction. So, I mean, I don't write anything that doesn't have some research in it. Like, I feel like the idea comes to me, but it's stuff like, okay, well, this person's in a hospital. What would actually be there? Would they really have access to this person? Or like, what time of day is it? You know, like I was writing some short story and it was going to be set outside of Meadowood. And I was like, and so like, you know, I wrote the draft, but then I was like, all right, what is it a Circle K that's at that corner?
It's not like, just a convenience store. It's a Royal Farms, right? Like it's specific.
Right. It's gotta be specific. And then it's like, okay, I mean, I kind of like doing the research because it instructs you. Like, it's like, okay, who would actually be there at that given time? Is that realistic? And then you can think, okay, well, what can happen to this person given who would actually be there, given what it would actually look like? What's the most logical thing that would happen next? Like, I think that type of accuracy is like really like generates creativity actually.
Well, and you think there's critical thinking going on the other end too. People want to be informed about this. Mary Crotty is here. She teaches writing and the good writing, the type you have to sit down and do for travel writing, special topics in creative writing, writing like a writer, writing about a place, writing fiction, things that I can't do. It'd be like me taking a play-by-play course or something like that. This symposium you're doing on St. Patrick's Day once a year, the history of doing this over the course of years, what dictates what direction you go in year by year? Because this is you want to make it different every year, right?
Sure. So we're in the process of that now. This is my first year as the director of the symposium. So we're in the process of choosing the books for the next 2 years. And so different directors do it differently. We have a text committee. And so that's made up of different humanities professors. So, you know, like we have someone from theology, someone from history, we have me from writing. And, you know, so we solicited suggestions from the faculty, you know, through all of the disciplines. Like we got some suggestions from the scientists, from people in business, like, you know, everyone's sort of engaged in that conversation. And then this year we're going to like narrow it down to a few, and then I give people a survey. So it's, you know, which books are you excited about? And also which ones can you realistically teach? So one thing that's different about the Humanities Symposium than say like a common read program is we're not just asking people to read the book and talk about it. We're asking people to actually study this in their courses so that like integrate it into their history class. And so not every book can really, like there's a lot of books that I think are really, I'm not going to name names, but books that I think are really fascinating and that I would love to talk about, but I can't imagine how somebody in philosophy would actually teach that.
They don't
book.
Cover the whole spectrum of what you're trying to do.
And I have to admit that one feedback we do get is let's make it reasonable in terms of length. So, you know, like I'm not going to assign an 800 page book that people are somehow supposed to just absorb into their regular coursework. So
Mary Crotty's here. The event is March 17th. She teaches writing and smart. Can we talk about What Counts as Love, which has won all these awards and, you know, book of short stories, correct? Fiction,
short stories.
All fiction. Yep. And what is a short story? Like what makes it a short story? Is that less than 30? Is there a criteria for that?
People really like to debate this. You know, I was talking about Lauren Groff. She had something that was in the New Yorker maybe like a year ago, and people were like, is it a novella? Is it a short story? But typically, if you're going to try to publish something in a literary journal, you know, like under 7,000 words.
Okay. So a Sunday read, kind of, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, shorter, I think, is better. If you're just strictly like being like really pragmatic about trying to get it into publication, you know, a lot of these are hard copy. But in terms of, you know, getting the story off the ground, trying to have all of the layers, I think for me, it usually clocks in around 20 pages, double spaced.
All right. So here's the part where you're going to spank me and play the role of the teacher, and you're going to say I'm correct, but you can only imagine how rambunctious I was as a 19, 20, 21-year-old youthful cub reporter at the paper. And I thought at that time I might have been a desk editor or a layout because I had a little design thing in me as well. But the editors are cut from a different cloth. And I've had two published on paper books. One is well edited because it had a professional editor. Thank you, Kevin Eck. The second one did not have a professional editor. I'll blame Don Mohler for that. Editing, man. Like I've had a conversation recently with the folks down at the Banner, and they're, you know, putting together a whole journalism thing. And I said, if there's anything in my life that I probably would hate at my age that I need more than anything, would be an editor. And I'm old enough now to at least say to every editor who I ever fought with when I was 19 and they were 40 and they're all like 70 now, and they're still alive and they love me and I love them, is that I want to bring them back out of retirement, because editors are important, Mary, and they're really, really important. They keep me from making a fool of myself.
Oh my God. Like, I feel like the mistakes, like even in fiction, like in that short story collection, there's a short story where there's a high school student, and the short story is composed as if she's writing a college application. So it's like the questions from like the common application supplemental questions, and she answers those, and that's a short story. And in one of those, I mistook asteroid for meteor, and an editor caught that. And I'm like, it's something that like doesn't matter, but it does matter, because somebody reads that and they're like, please, this lady doesn't even know the difference between an asteroid and a meteor. I'm not going to buy her fiction. I feel like it's like, there's that book, The Forest for the Trees, that's by that editor. And she talks about like, I can't remember what publishing house she's at, but she compares a great editor to like giving you a facelift. So it's like, you are yourself, but just a little bit better, a little bit shinier. And,
I read
Eat
Shoots and Leaves back in the day, you know.
So
that was all about where you're putting your commas and what your intentions are with what you're writing. But editors, man, like, I haven't had one in a long time. I'd love to get one. You know what I mean? Like, they're important. And I think that's a part of the writing thing. People, when you read What Counts as Love and you see these stories, Did you have contentious fights even through that with any editor that pulled stuff out that doesn't exist anymore that you wish went back in?
Not too much. I mean, I've heard people have stories like that. For when I was working with the Iowa Press, they were sort of like, I submitted it to them and they were like, okay, this is it. Like, I think I probably would have edited it a little more than they wanted it to be edited, maybe, because it was submitted through a contest. So Andre DeBoost III judged it, and they were sort of like, okay, he's putting his name on this, so you can't like go swapping out a bunch of stories.
We can't swap out an asteroid for a meteor once we do that.
Yeah, that you can do, but he can't put in completely new stories. But, you know, I didn't have an experience like that. I mean, a lot of the editing that happens for me is like, even before I submit stuff out, like I have two friends that read, one of them's in St. Louis and one of them's in Lubbock, Texas. And I just am like, sometimes at night, I'm like, what if Katie doesn't want to read my fiction for me anymore? Like, she's such a genius in terms of like asking the right question. Like, well, what is this lady thinking at the end of the story? And then I'm like, oh,
that's why you're award winning. That's why you're award winning. Cause you have editors in two different places. That's what it is.
So true. So true.
Marion Crotty is here. Her book is What Counts as Love. You can go check that out and Google her, Crotty. She is involved in hosting and putting on and directing a really cool symposium beginning actually the night of March 17th, which for some of you, you can wear your green when you come by to see author Jeff Vandermeer. You can go to loyola.edu and the Humanities Symposium and learn more about a Humanities Symposium. Man, that sounds fancy, doesn't it?
I think it sounds more intimidating than it is. I think it's just going to be fun, you know? He's doing a reading in the afternoon. It's free. You know, pretty much all of our events at Loyola are free, which is happy for everyone to come be part of them. If you just want to hear him read, you can come at 3. And if you want to hear him give a lecture about how he sort of became somebody who writes about the environment and his science fiction and Ursula Le Guin, that's at 6.
Marion Crotty is the Humanities Symposium Director, Professor of Writing at Loyola University, and my future editor around here. Keep me out of trouble. Hey, it was great having you on.
I love having
writers on and talking about what goes into it, because, we all spend our day on the web, and sometimes it's words or podcasts or videos, but like, I spend an inordinate amount of time reading digital type in different ways. Mm-hmm. And every time I speak to somebody like you or my daughter-in-law, it's like, all right, at some point, I'm going to go back to Hawaii or back to Moorea or back to Jamaica or even to Florida, and I'm just going to take a book. Just a dumb book. Just not something that's real, just something that's Star Warsy, and sit and read Hemingway or something like that. So, or Moby Dick, I don't know.
Yeah, it's supposed to be fun, you know.
Read what you love, says my my new professor of writing here at Loyola. Mary, thank you very much. You've been a great guest.
Thanks
for coming on. All right. Stretching it out at Baltimore Positive. We're going to be doing a Maryland Crab Cake Tour with cool people like Professor Crotty. We're going to begin that on Friday at Mama's on the Half Shell down in Canton. It's all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play with the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. The Wise Conversations, of course, presented by our friends at Wise Markets. We're rounding up all month long. I'll be talking to Rob Santoni about that, as well as the delicious ice cream that I picked up over Wise Markets the other day. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.